This is Total Rugby with Chris Ray and Martin Cross.
A spectacular start to the RBS Six Nations. Fast, furious and unpredictable.
What a fantastic game for Italy. And you saw the improvements that Italy have now made. 2 years ago, when they received ball inside their half, they'd have kicked it back.
30 years on from Scotland's last victory at Twickenham, we reunite two old foes.
I almost want Scotland to win to get this monkey off my back. But I'd rather they didn't win, and I'll be here in 2 years' time.
Belgium give Georgia the fright of their lives in Brussels.
10 years ago, we were playing in front of 250 people and three dogs. I think that key to success is training.
And in Wellington, Kenya continue to make strides on the HSBC Sevens World Series.
Still in possession, this is the wonderful effort by Kenya, and they are going to tie it up!
On TV, on radio, and online, covering stories around the world, this is Total Rugby.
In the 103 years since England began playing at Twickenham, there have been only four winning Scottish sides, the last 30 years ago. On opposite sides that day were the England scrum half Steve Smith and Scotland standoff John Rutherford. And before last weekend's Calcutta Cup match, I met up with them.
I always thought he was a big scrum half for his time, but obviously talented, good leader. Didn't win too many times against you, Stevie,
no.
Apart from 1983, which we'll talk about in a minute. And, of course, we toured the Lions together. And one thing about Stevie, he was a great tourist.
Well, you know, it's funny because there was a lot of great fly halves around in those days. And I mean great fly halves, you know, your Tony Ward, your Ollie Campbells, and we just finished the Bennett era. And Scotland always produced one. And Wood was one of those really top class fly halves. He was a real pain in the backside to us, but he was a class act.
And there were very good games you had between you at that time, weren't they?
Excellent. I mean, you'd have to say England would always have a stronger side, but we had some good mobility in the Scottish teams in these days, and they were close, particularly a couple of games at Twickenham.
Going back to the 83 game, it was the three old stands and the one new stand, the South Stand. So they actually still had the wooden stands. And, of course, the South Stand, which is no longer there anymore, was a real innovation, looked like, you know, a good tooth and a bad set of teeth. And it was just packed to the rafters. And coming into the ground, everything was packed. You had so many people outside in the West car park, and the whole atmosphere was... And England-Scotland, it just was special.
I've got something to reveal, actually. After 30 years, after that 83 game, we didn't know at the time, but the England captain, who was John Scott that game, always had an RFU tab. And the Scottish boys happened to find out his room number. So we had a great night in the back of John Scott. And I always thought about years later, phoning up, saying, what was your room bill like after the game?
I'll tell you one thing, Scotty wouldn't have been paying it, that's for sure.
The build-up to the match in 1983, had it gone well for Scotland?
No. Chris, we lost all three games leading into it, so it was a significant game for the Scottish boys because we certainly didn't want to win the wooden spoon. And of course, Steve, it was the last game where selection for the Lions was up for grabs.
It was a very weird period for me because I started the season as captain. We got a point in Cardiff and I got dropped completely from the squad. I mean, I wasn't even on the bench for the game. And they brought in Nigel Melville and Nick Youngs, of course, who's Ben's dad. So I was in a nightclub in Manchester at 12 o'clock on a Wednesday night. True story. And I get a phone call from my housemate saying, Nigel Melville's injured. Surprise, surprise. And you're playing. I said, well, I can't be playing because I'm not even on the bench. So I went from captain to dropped out of the squad to a nightclub on Wednesday night to driving out of Twickenham on Thursday to playing the game on the Saturday.
And did you get presented with your jerseys?
No. I mean, I got my cap. I found my cap on the drive. It was delivered by the postman. It was blowing halfway exactly. Down Chester High Street by the time I picked it up. I mean, there was no presentations.
How significant was the fact that it was the Calcutta Cup match and such a key match in the season?
Well, one thing you learn quickly when you play for England is that everybody hates you. It's just a level of hatred. I don't know what our ancestors have done, but we were picking up the ticket for it. And it was a game within a tournament, because, like you said, you got the Calcutta Cup, and you could get you could lose a couple of games, but get away with it if you win the Calcutta Cup. So it was always a very, very special game. A lot of passion, a lot of atmosphere. Yeah. They were just great occasions. Yeah.
What do you remember of the day itself? Was it were the conditions good? Was it?
I think they were fine. I think it was a pretty decent day, and it was a typical Calcutta Cup game. Both teams going at each other. Half time it was 9-9, and I'd have to say England were a better side. They had most of the pressure, but Roy managed to sneak up the blind side. We got our noses in front, and then it was always going to be tough for England. And we got a try at the end where Tom Smith fell over the trying line. I think he still talks about it from 40 yards out, but 40 inches would have been closer.
It's funny how John remembers this game in every detail when I have totally obliterated this from my memory. All I can remember is the score. I remember Roy's try because, like you say, we're all vying for Lions places, and then I just saw the game being lost in my Lions place going down the drain at the same time.
And not a very nice place to be in history, Steve, for an England team to lose at Twickenham.
You know what? I get wheeled out every 2 years now, just because this is the game, the last time Scotland, you know, beat England. I almost want Scotland to win to get this monkey off my back. But I'd rather they didn't win, and I'll be here in 2 years' time.
England's 30-year unbeaten record was never seriously threatened at Twickenham, despite Scotland taking an early lead. England's 38-18 victory, the starting point for our resident analyst, former England and Scotland head coach, Andy Robinson.
The game was won by England dominating the game line and getting a go forward from their first phase possession. The first kick receipt that they had, Morgan carried it forward 30 metres, breaking the tackles of Visser, breaking the tackles of Laidlaw. The second attack that they had, again, they're slightly different. They moved it wide, but they were able to gain 30 metres. So Scotland were constantly put on the back foot, and that enabled Youngs and Farrell to control the game and have an armchair ride. On top of that, the England players, because they had time on the ball, were able to run really good lines, and Wood was able to make a break. You saw the 12 trees try that he scored. Yeah, they had time to pick their lines, and that was because Scotland were put on the back foot, but also the Scotland defence didn't go forward and put them under pressure. So firstly, well done to England for being able to carry the ball in the way that they did, the momentum that they got, the accuracy of their first phase attacks. And secondly, you have to look at Scotland in some respects because they didn't get the go forward to put them under pressure.
And what about the result of the weekend? Italy up to ninth in the latest IRB World Rankings after their 23-18 victory over France.
What a fantastic game for Italy. And you saw the improvements that Italy have now made. 2 years ago, when they received ball inside their half, they'd have kicked it back. But in this game, they attacked back against France. And the first try that Parisse scored, phenomenal work by McLean and Okera attacking the French forwards, making a line break, finding the mismatches, and then connecting with Parisse. And then the second try that Castro scored. Yeah, to turn the ball over from inside their own, under their posts, and to run the ball back from there was amazing. And again, Akira spotting a couple of forwards, running between them and getting the offload to Castro. What a phenomenal try. And you know, 2 years ago, Italy would have kicked those balls back and they wouldn't have scored.
And what were your thoughts on Ireland's 30 points to 22 win in Cardiff over Wales, a result that drops the Welsh down to 10th in the world rankings?
A game of two halves, and very much down to the possession, and both teams trying to keep hold of possession. In the first half, Ireland did so well with the possession that they had, the way that they ran their attacks, putting Wales on the back foot again. And you know, the first try, O'Driscoll magic, you know, running a very good line, and to get that pass away was tremendous, and you know, shows the skills that O'Driscoll has. The second half, Wales got a bit of momentum and Ireland started to give a couple of penalties away. And then suddenly, yeah, you saw the attacking flair of the Welsh coming to play with North getting hands on the ball, Cuthbert running well, and showed that they were a dangerous side.
And that willingness to attack, you know, ambitious rugby, was really a standout theme this weekend.
Well, I saw a number of tries that were scored because of the backs really picking out forwards, particularly front row forwards, and using their footballing skills and their footwork to beat them. Stuart Hogg's first break against England highlighted that. being able to attack Cole up the short side. Again, the French, when they attacked and Full scored his try, it was the French backs attacking against the Italian forwards, and they were able to make the line breaks, get the offloads away. I think that was, again, highlights for everybody that yeah, there are mismatches out on that field. And if you're given time and space to be able to see them, the backs have the skills to break down the forwards.
And did any players particularly stand out for you?
But the standout position of the week for me was the number eight position. For all teams, tremendous performers, real characters. And you know, you think about the Parise-Picamoles battle, what a tremendous battle that was. Then you look at Beattie against Morgan, two very strong ball carriers and players that had a big effect for both those teams. And finally, in the first game of the championship, Heaslip against Faletau. Yeah, Faletau was a little bit quiet in the first half, but then he got his running game going. And for me, yeah, Heaslip, being captain of Ireland, showed his true credentials, not just in his attacking play, but also his defensive shift that he put in.
And looking ahead to this weekend?
Well, it's all set up for the Sunday match, Ireland against England. And England haven't done that well in Ireland over the last few years, so they'll be looking to build on the performance that they've put in at Twickenham. The key battleground in this game, yeah, I think the aerial threat that Ireland have, obviously the choke tackle and England's ability to get quick ball, and finally the opportunities that are going to be there. Can England take the opportunities? And when you play away from home, it's key that you take the chances.
England's dominance of the women's game continued at the weekend when they began the defence of their Six Nations title with an emphatic 76-0 victory over Scotland. Captain Sarah Hunter.
I don't think before the game we were ever expecting a result like that. We knew we had a performance within us, and the hard work that we've done since Christmas has coming together as a squad finally sort of paid off. And all credit to the Scots. The first half was tough, especially the opening 20 minutes. They were very physical. They stopped us playing, but we had the patience and composure to keep playing the way we wanted to and the style we wanted to. And finally, in the second half, it broke down and we found holes and we sort of unleashed what we knew we had within us.
Italy's women matched the exploits of their men with a shock 13-12 win at home against France, and Ireland beat Wales 12 points to 10.
In the European Nations Cup, which runs concurrently with the Six Nations, Romania beat Portugal to climb one place to 18th in the IRB rankings. Russia beat higher-ranked Spain, and Belgium, newly promoted to Division 1A, almost produced a shock result on their debut, losing narrowly to Georgia, 17-13. 10 years ago, Belgium were ranked 58th. Now they lie 21st. So what have been the reasons for this impressive rise? Former president of the union, Danny Rowlands, has followed their progress all the way.
10 years ago, we were playing in front of 250 people and three dogs. I think that key to success is training. We also have in place what we call a Vivaldi plan, which is a part of the Strat plan, placing requirement with the clubs and with each level of the games in order to improve.
Belgium coach Richard McClintock.
Le travail, le travail, le travail.
Work, a lot of hard work. We had quite a lot of young players to create a new team and a new coaching staff. Some of these players went to play in France to compete at a higher level. And we created a new spirit. Up until then, there'd been no pride in playing for the national team. And of course, we've since had some success.
The game remains amateur in Belgium, with their leading players participating either in the domestic league or playing in France. Although attitudes are fast changing, it remains a minority sport. But according to Captain Andrew Neal, its profile and the number of those taking part are on the rise.
I started playing rugby when I was 5 years old, because my father was Irish and he loved rugby. So he put me when I was still a little boy to the rugby. So my mother was very scared, but she was Belgian and she didn't know what was rugby, so she was very scared. But after I loved that game, and now I'm 31, so it's 26 years I play rugby now.
The challenge facing them in their first match in the top division was a tough one. Defending champions Georgia have taken part in the last three World Cups. Their players are almost all professional, in contrast to the Belgian players, among them Charlie Fourneau.
I would say the most important game we ever played We played big teams before, like British Barbarians and Argentina, but it wasn't like real competition. Tomor would be the biggest team we ever played in the last, 10 years. It's going to be interesting.
And the Belgians certainly lived up to the occasion, running Georgia so close.
Today we can imagine anything. And I think that all the guys and me will give everything. Next week also, to you see, when you see all those people coming to see the rugby, when in Belgium they don't even know what it is. I'm very proud of the team, so yes, I'm very proud of the team and of what we've done.
There are now more ways than ever to listen to Total Rugby. Broadcast on FM, medium wave and short wave in over 100 countries worldwide. On iTunes and available on the IRB and Rugby World websites. You can now also be part of the show on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube or by emailing radio@irb.com. Covering stories across the world. This is Total Rugby.
New Zealand's capital city, Wellington, was the venue for the fourth round of the HSBC Sevens World Series last weekend. Seb Lozier reports.
Right from the start, this was as competitive as it was enthralling. In sweltering heat, the Hurt Sevens in Wellington delivered a real treat. The hosts and defending champions New Zealand, they lost early to England, who were in search of their first Cup quarter-final place of the season. Canada beat South Africa, while Australia and Scotland, they both beat Sevens giants Fiji to condemn them to life in the bowl for the first time ever in the 14-year history of IRB Sevens rugby. Samoa, Kenya and Australia, the only sides with 100% records entering the knockout stages. And it was the Kenyans who stole the show on day two, beating South Africa to line up against the hosts, New Zealand, in the semis.
Here comes Biko Adema. Now they're trying to move it out to the big Mbaka. And now they're through. It's tipped over. Otieno is down at the 22. Still in possession. This is a wonderful effort by Kenya. And they are going to tie it up. There's Masarewa. Fumble again, but he regained it. Rakutis. Here is the winning for Kenya. It's Oscar Uma. And Kenya will play the final in Wellington 2013.
Kenya doing the unthinkable. Coach Mike Friday already very proud.
Sevens rugby. I mean, I think what you're finding now is the margins are so fine. You know, there's no weak team. Everybody's is fighting for those wins and those points. And if you're slightly off your game, you make one mistake, you pay for that in the game of sevens. You know, the difference between success and failure is so small now, and that's why preparation and making sure you get everything right off the pitch to put the boys in the best frame of mind on the pitch is a crucial part now.
The Kenyans taking all of the partisan Kiwi support with them into the cup final, while in the other half of the draw, another side was enjoying its best performance of the season by a mile. With Matt Turner back and self-belief returning, England saw off first Scotland and then one of the form teams in Samoa to line up against the Kenyans in the final.
This is the inspiration, the catalyst, Matt Turner. And now Dan Norton, he's the greyhound, breakthrough, what a start for England. And Mbaka's got away, he's going to go behind the post. William Mbaka, he's been absolutely outstanding. England surely have the chance here. Brightwell drives, the last play, it's under the post. Surely it's going to be extra time here in the final. First score will be the winners. This is Rodwell. Now they're Dan Norton, Marcus Watson. Still, Kenya bring them down. But it's a try, and it's scored by Sam Edgerly for England.
20-year-old Sam Edgerly, the hero. Remarkably, England becoming the fourth different cup winners in four rounds of the HSBC Sevens World Series so far this season. And afterwards, we heard from a very proud coach, Ben Ryan, and Edgerly himself.
It's just fantastic. I'm overwhelmed, to be honest. It's my first ever tournament win for England. I'm the proudest man in the world.
Well, England head coach Ben Ryan, it's good to see a smile back on your face. You must be delighted.
I am, you know, and I don't think relieved is the word. I'm just thrilled for the performance that I knew we had in us. You know, that type of dedication that I see on the training field, I see on one-on-ones with the players, I see in the gym. A lot of people didn't see in those first three tournaments, and we had a lot of doubters, and we got belief today, and we built on momentum. I talk about it a lot as a coach, but you can't buy momentum, and we had that. I honestly didn't think we were going to lose the tournament when we woke up this morning. Not being arrogant, but I felt we had the odds on New Zealand in the first game. I just didn't think we were going to lose. And when I saw the guys' eyes and I saw that they actually didn't jump up and down after beating New Zealand, they saw that that was the start of our new journey, I thought we got this one.
England up to eighth in the World Series, Kenya now second to New Zealand, and one of their key men was Oscar Uma.
We are really proud. We've been working hard back at home after the PE leg. We didn't perform as we intended, so when we went home, we went back to the drawing board, bit of technical, physical stuff. But really proud of the achievement, and we hope to put it a notch higher in Vegas.
In the other trophies, Wales beat Tonga to the Shield. Canada were also too good for Fiji to take the bowl. And Australia trumped Scotland to win the plate. New Zealand, 21 points clear now in the HSBC Sevens World Series, and they seem to have unearthed another rare gem in Gillies Carker. But Kurt Baker and Captain DJ Forbes, they are both injured and won't travel to the States, so it remains to be seen how the defending World Series champions will do without two key players at round five next week, the USA Sevens in Las Vegas.
On the other side of the Pacific, the finest women's players in the world were also in action in round two of the IRB Women's Sevens World Series in Houston, Texas. The IRB's Susan Carty.
We had a strategic review of the future of women's sevens following the Olympic decision and all the growth and momentum that we've gained from that. And obviously the need for increased competition was raised in the build-up and planning towards the Olympic Games in 2016. So we commenced the inaugural IRB series in Dubai at the end of last year, and Houston is the second leg of that series. We've two further events to come. So we're in China next at the end of March, and we finish in Amsterdam in May.
12 nations took part, including New Zealand, who had won the opening tournament in Dubai. The players, including Linda Franson from the Netherlands and Venetia McGee from the USA, were well aware of the importance of the competition.
The Women's Series is huge for women's rugby all across the world. It sheds a lot of light on us that we didn't have before, and it brings us a little more level with the men's series and what they're doing for rugby. And so far, it's off to a great start.
I think it's very important. Women's rugby has been growing over the past few years, especially since it's Olympic now. And it's important that the audience can see it as well. And playing here in such a big stadium, being live-streamed on the internet, I think it will get the attention of a bigger audience. And that's very important, I think.
And after 2 days of intense action, England faced the hosts in the final.
They work at the right side. Watmore splits defenders, and Watmore is on the run. And Joanne Watmore going to start the scoring for England.
Goodwalla defense.
There we go, Marquino.
And she does that
Set
so
sail.
Well.
Boom.
Cherry picking Marquino.
The second half kick goes to England, and it is England thinking with the move as Watmore, seen this before. Joanne starts to open up, got one to beat, gets Rozier spun around, and that's going to be another try for Joanne Watmore. If you're England, you love doing that.
A hat-trick of tries from Joe Watmore helping England to a comfortable 29-12 victory. But despite the win, England's Heather Fisher remained cautious as to their overall series title prospects.
You can't really say we're at the top, New Zealand at the top, Australia. You know, it's an open bag. Anything can happen in the game of sevens, and that's why it's a fantastic game to watch. You know, any nation can win. Russia are looking really strong. You know, Argentina, Japan are coming through really strong. Australia, New Zealand, always a massive test for us. You know, you've got to keep rising your game each tournament, each, you know, every day.
Martin Castrogiovanni, a national hero following his try against France, is one of the great characters of Italian rugby. He's a man who's rarely short of a word, but when we got him in the hot seat for our regular quiz Tackle These, words, or should we say answers, failed him.
So first off, Castro, I mean, how many of your 88 caps have been played in Rome?
I will guess now, because I've no idea. Maybe 35?
26. Yeah.
It's not too bad.
Question two. I mean, you've scored tries against eight different countries for Italy. Can you name them?
Oh, Wales, Japan, Ireland, Romania?
Nope.
Georgia was.
Yep.
Yes. You say eight countries.
Yeah.
Which is the other one? Russia,
yep.
Yes. I no idea the last three.
Canada,
yes.
France?
I score against France.
Yeah. And the USA.
And USA.
Yeah. Which international loosehead have you faced the most amount of times
You have no idea. I would love to know that.
He's Irish.
He's Irish. Can be...
Not their current loose head.
No, can be him.
Played for Munster.
I don't remember the name. Well, tell me the name because I know who is he. He played for... No, it's not O'Gara. He's Horan.
Yep.
Yes, there is. You can cut it now, yeah? This is good because I'm learning now for myself. I like these questions. Come on.
And finally, your last question. How many loose head props have you faced for Italy in your 88 caps?
No idea, but I will guess. Play 80 again, you play Six Nations, you have five countries there. 20?
You've faced 60 different loose head props.
60?
6-0. You've faced 60 different loose head props in your 88 caps.
Good to know. But that doesn't mean I'm really old.
Next week on Total Rugby,
we meet mercurial Frenchman Freddy Michelac
and catch up with seven speedster Carlin Isles.
Join us then.
On TV, on radio and online, covering stories around the world, this is Total Rugby.